All of his stuff looked good, some probably too good because it was probably snug, but he was different in everything that he did. He locked up different. He locked up snug.
Hey, this is your Olympic hero, Kurt Angle, and you're listening to Snug Wrestling. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
As a special episode of the Snug Wrestling Podcast, because we're going to talk about last night's Elimination Chamber. Holy shit, you guys. Last night's PLE was a lot more crazier and intense than we expected. We expected a lot from this, but goddamn, we got so much more out of this. We got a lot of our questions answered. We now know what to expect to see at WrestleMania. We got the answer that we were anticipating. What is Cody going to do? John Cena turned heel. And there's so much things that we're going to go over here today. We're going to share our thoughts about last night's Elimination Chamber. I have a short roster today. It's only Mr. Blood and Tommy here with me. How's it going, fellas?
Hey.
Awesome. Awesome.
Let's start off hot, you guys. I want to start with the John Cena turn.
Oh, we're starting off the heel turn.
Let's
okay.
Start off with the bang here, you guys, because... long story short, we got the answer. Cody Rhodes told The Rock to go fuck himself when it comes to Cody Rhodes selling his soul to The Rock. Now, The Rock did, he did show up with Travis Scott. He got a big pop. It was a great moment to see The Rock. And it was an even greater moment to see Cody Rhodes refuse or deny The Rock's offer. But then we got the big swerve. I'm gonna be honest. I did not see this one coming. I was really surprised. I thought no way in hell John Cena is gonna turn heel on his last run on his retirement tour. Why would they turn John Cena heel?
The only one that did and that actually said it was Blood.
But it happened. It happened, you guys, and man, I was shocked as hell. I could not believe what I was seeing, but it looks like The Rock and John Cena have joined forces, and they beat the crap out of Cody Rhodes. So who wants to go first here, guys?
Go ahead, Blood.
All right, so yes, this was in our predictions last week on Monday on the podcast after Raw. Instead of doing the Raw review, we did the Chamber prediction. If you haven't seen it yet, anywhere you get your podcasts, check it out. But it's I had stated that I said, well, if Cena wins, what if it ties into the actual Rock and Cody segment? Because one of the things I said, and I didn't outright just go, this is what's going to happen. I interrupted one of you talking, and I said, oh, I have this crazy idea. And it was off of something that I believe BT had said, because BT had given his version of what he thought would happen between Cody and Rock. And he said, well, what if this happened, yada, yada. I said, well, I got you one better. What if Cody says no, and The Rock goes, well, that's okay. I got a backup plan. And it turned out to be Cena, and Cena would turn on Cody. I didn't state that it would be a heel turn, but I stated, what if John Cena was The Rock's backup for his corporate champion? Because I said John Cena has always been a company guy.
That sounded so crazy to me when you first said that. I was like, no way in fucking hell would that ever happen.
But then when I thought about it,
the blink. Because he said he'll be available. Signing out of work now.
Oh, but you talking about sending Tommy a link or Toxic a link?
BT. BT is signing out of work right now. He just messaged him.
Okay.
Well, he can tell us when he's ready.
But as far as it's concerned, so I thought the reason that the heel turn made sense before it happened, at least on my prediction, was because I thought of the history of Rock and Cena. And I thought, well, God, they went back and forth so much. Cena has become the very thing that he was so dejected toward The Rock for originally in their first feud. You were the wrestling guy who said you'd never leave, and then you left. And then when you came back, you'd only come back for stints, and you would leave again. And that's who Cena became. So to me, it made sense that after last year when they faced each other again in the ring, when it came to Cody versus Roman, I thought, well, there's still some mileage here. Now, this is before we knew about Cena's last year run. But I thought, well, God, what if we had something interacting with these guys again? That stirred my head. I was like, because, yeah, it's a cool spot to, you know, stuff the finish of Rock and or sorry, Roman and Cody. But then I thought, well, wait, John Cena finally understands where the Rock was coming from 13 years ago. He gets it now. He's living the Rock's same type of schedule, that same type of life, you know? And I thought, if there was ever going to be somebody that The Rock would use against Cody, it would be Cena, because he makes the most sense in their canonical story. The overall segment it could have been the most cookie cutter shit ever. No, screw you. I'm here for the fans, yada, 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 yada. And I think that's what was so beautiful about it. They played that beat for beat to swerve us. They did, on purpose, started out as the cookie cutter, go screw yourself, I'm the ultimate white meat babyface segment, where, you know, the fucking babyface champion tells that heel authority figure, I would never side with you, I'm with the people!
I get what you're saying, bud. I get what you're saying, but, like, this is John Cena's farewell tour. This is...
Well, I got something for you there.
Almost any expected him to automatically, like, turn heel for the first time.
Here's the thing. I think part of me did expect it. But the thing was, I was so wrapped up in the show, so wrapped up in the matches, so wrapped up in the moment that, first off, the thing that they really did to kind of pull the wool over our eyes, if you think about that thing about it, they had Cody drop a completely scripted and uncensored go fuck yourself to The Rock to send everybody in the audience into a frenzy and everybody at home into a frenzy. So we would be so focused on what he just said that in the moment that we did expect a heel turn, we would have forgotten that it was even a possibility because we were so thrown back by what Cody had just done live on TV. So they let him do that. So we would be so focused on this, we would have forgotten that we were also thinking about this being a thing that could happen. So when John Cena did his normal, dude, that's awesome, bro. Fuck this. Come here, bro. Yeah. We were so wrapped up in the old face versus the new face passing of the torch moment and, you know, John Cena's pride in Cody. We completely forgot that this was a possibility in that moment because we were so focused on what was happening in the moment. And John Cena's facial expressions to me are what really put this segment into the stratosphere of this will go down as one of the greatest professional wrestling moments of all time. His facial expression, when he hugged Cody, at first, I thought when he was looking at The Rock like, I thought he was just glaring at him like, you're not going to steal his soul like you tried to steal, you know, like, I won't let you do it kind of thing, is what I thought that stare meant at first. But then when The Rock did kind of the most awkward throat cut. I mean, you throat cut like this. Who the fuck does from the fucking side of the cheek all like, have you ever noticed that? The Rock literally goes across.
Don't hate on The Rock. The Rock can do no wrong.
But I'm just saying, I was like, bro, you just wipe it off sweat? Like, what is this? But literally, it was the facials that sold it because the moment the audience, because in the crowd, I saw footage from people in the crowd that were filming it in the ring and the Tron was in the background, and people were so excited about the hug. The moment the camera on the Tron for the live audience switches to Cena's face doing that grill, the whole audience goes, oh, audibly. In that moment, their stomachs dropped, and they felt no. And then the moment he pushes away, you're like, oh, okay, never. Oh, shit, he did it! And it was the moment of moments. Travis Scott even played a part where everybody's like, well, why is he there? Why is Travis Scott there? He doesn't need to be there. Well, I'll argue the fact that Travis Scott needed to be there because The Rock is trying to show Cody, hey, I can introduce you to all walks of life, celebrities, money. I've got my entourage here with one of the most famous rappers on the planet who's also a Grammy Award winner. And he's doing the theme for the very WrestleMania that I'm going to rip that title away from you at. And so, and he helped hold Cody down.
Yeah.
Travis literally did the bidding of The Rock. That's how far The Rock's reach goes. He's got such a reach. He was able to get the most baby face in history of all baby faces next to Hulk fucking Hogan for the record books of baby faces to hold this man's legs down while Travis Scott held his arms and they pulled him in separate directions while The Rock whipped Cody like a fucking slave. That's how far The Rock's reach goes.
We got a couple comments. YBC Trails, I see your question. Is Cena winning the belt? And also, we'll talk about that. We'll get into that in a little bit. And main event says the whole segment was set up beautifully. I'm going to let you finish, Mr. Blood, but I want to hear from Tommy here before we go on to the next segment. So tell us your thoughts.
Go for it.
So there's one thing that people are kind of forgetting that I've seen posted all day today. The way Rock counted at Bad Blood.
I saw that too, but I didn't get it. What does that have to do with anything?
He did this.
Okay.
Switch it around and you've got Cena's thing.
Oh, okay. That's a reach.
Switch it around and you've got Cena.
Well, at the press conference, The Rock said that he knew going into Netflix on Raw debut when everybody said, oh, you're a babyface. He said, by then, he's like, we already had a story in place. So it's not a far stretch to say that this was the goal the whole time. Don't forget, there was a conference last year when John Cena literally, when he was asked, hey, so what's your last year look like? John Cena said, I feel like we're going to do something we've never done before.
Yeah, I guess.
And that was the same press conference. So it's not hard to say that The Rock literally dropped a fucking Easter egg.
Yeah.
So, I mean, He's been dropping the whole time. The watch that Cody got beat down with last night was the watch that fucking The Rock handed to him last year at Monday Night After Mania.
They basically went full circle with that watch. That watch.
Full circle.
Dusty.
That was his dad's watch.
Him right after WrestleMania 40.
Yes, and he pawned that watch.
That was the chosen weapon for Cena, was Dusty's watch.
According to Michael Cole, there were brass knuckles, according to Michael Cole.
Yeah, I know. He mislooked at it. But that was the watch that Dusty Rhodes literally pawned so he could send Cody to acting school so Cody could pursue his original goal of trying to get into the acting business to better his career when he got into professional wrestling. He pawned that watch to pay for his own son's training. And that watch was found at a pawn shop by Nick Khan and fucking Triple H years later, and they gifted it back to Cody.
But people also seem to forget that also goes full circle with this. The Bloodline Rules match at WrestleMania 40. Who came out to deal with Solo?
John.
Exactly. Cena came out to deal with Solo. So this entire thing has once again gone full circle in two different ways. The watch and the fact that he helped him out at WrestleMania 4 to get that title in the first place.
Yeah, literally. He helped him gain it so he can take it away.
Well, me being the crazy wrestling conspiracy theorist that I am, when I first saw, you know, John Cena was out there celebrating, then out comes Cody Rhodes, and I'm like, okay, this is the WrestleMania main event.
But I thought he was going to win the chamber. Cena comes out. They do it. Not Cena comes out. Rhodes comes out. They do a face-off. Cena's out. That's originally
what... It's going to be a point of a sign thing, yeah.
But this is where I was going with this. So we see them face-to-face. Okay, this is the main event for WrestleMania that we've all pretty much predicted. We thought this was going to happen. I still thought, I wish it was Punk, but we'll talk about that more later on. And I was like, Cody's wearing all black. Holy shit. Then The Rock and Travis Scott come out. They're wearing all black. And I'm like, holy shit, Cody. And I'm just like looking at finding like these little things, like these little reasons that tell me something. And I still can't believe it.
Pocket square with Paul Heyman, like the red pocket square that Paul Heyman had.
No, I just mean the outfits. The fact that Cody Rhodes is wearing black, I can't remember the last time he's worn all black like that.
Yeah, like wrestlers do hint towards things in their attire. I feel where you're going there, Snug. You could honestly say that that was basically them saying this is a memoriam for babyface John Cena.
So. Then again, I still can't believe this happened because this is John Cena's farewell tour. I thought for sure they can't turn John heel during his last run. They would lose out on all this money. Business-wise, it doesn't make sense. You know, the Make-A-Wish kids and this and, you know, everything told me that this would never happen, and it did. But people are comparing this heel turn...
The Wish thing right before the chamber.
People are comparing this heel turn with the Hulk Hogan heel turn, which I get the comparison. It's a big deal, but I'm pretty sure John Cena has been heel before, so this is probably the closest thing to Hulk Hogan turning heel back in WCW.
Well, Hogan was a heel first too. People forget that. Hogan started out as a heel before he got brought up as Hulk Hogan. He was a heel. So it's and John Cena started out as a babyface, immediately transitioned into a heel right when he's going to get fired, but he hasn't been a heel in 22 years.
Hold on.
That's why this is so massive.
Let's go back to that. I thought the whole point or one of the big reasons why that Hulk Hogan heel turn was such a big deal was because Hulk Hogan has never been heel in his entire career, at least.
They rewrite history. People also said that Andre the Giant had never been slammed until Hulk Hogan done it. And Andre had been slammed like nine or ten times before it was televised.
When was Hulk Hogan heel in the WWF?
Not in the WWF. He started his career out as a heel working territories. And when he originally got signed still as Terry Bollea before he got the Hulk Hogan moniker, he was a heel before he blew up.
Okay, I get that. But no one watches the territories. The territories wasn't on TV. In WWF,
Hogan worked heel on national TV. He worked heel on national TV.
Where?
In the very, very beginning.
In the WWF.
He's literally gone on record and talked about it. He's done an interview about it.
Okay.
Yeah, Snug, I'm not sure if this was WCW or WWF. I cannot remember for the life of me which one it is. But the NWO.
What about it?
The whole thing of a mystery piece that
mystery third man.
With him, the mystery piece. All of a sudden, Hogan comes out. It's like, oh, what side is he on? What side is he on?
Yeah.
And he was on NWO.
Right. That was the first
time. I feel like this was executed better.
So
because Hulk came out and he almost automatically turned. They let John simmer with Cena for many moments, even to the point of buddying up to Cody, and then the embrace, and then the Julius Caesar backstab.
Yeah,
Hogan's didn't get to simmer. It was just, I'm here. Oh, Hogan's gonna save them from Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, and then he just automatically drops the leg. Cena wrestled the whole night babyface. He was babyface throughout the entire segment until this moment.
Got an interesting comment here from Andy Reyes. Says the guy in the middle is too young to know anything. Well, thanks. I'll take that as a compliment for calling me young.
Are you in the middle?
Yeah, I'm in the middle.
You're in the middle, and then the other four would be all around.
I would love to know more about what you mean by that comment, Andy, because I just
he's the oldest one on the podcast.
I just don't I don't see the comparison that people are making with this, what happened with John Cena compared to Hulk fucking Hogan back in the 90s with WCW. That's
the only comparison here is the two biggest stars of their respected eras who were the absolute dictionary wrestling definition of what a babyface should be. who were so large baby faces that turning them heel seemed almost impossible because it could fail so massively. And to actually pull the trigger on something no one would ever think, because keeping them face was the safest option for the bottom line, for money, for sponsorship, for merchandise. To do this was such a risk when they were at the peak of their careers. When it happened, it blew the world away. Because who in the history has sold more merch than Hulk Hogan, than John Cena?
I get that. I mean, it's a risk.
So quick.
It failed with Stone Cold. It failed when they did Stone Cold.
I get that.
You know?
Go ahead, Tommy.
I'm going to reply to the comment real quick. Dude, I'm sorry, but you've got the wrong guy. Between the three of us, the one that's not old enough to know all of this, but still does, is me.
Yeah, but see,
I'm the youngest out of the three of us.
Yeah, we're not gonna even pay attention to him anymore. It's just, oh man, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but like, yeah, I understand. I just feel like people are just reaching here when it comes to.
I'm still speechless.
Because we've seen John Cena be heel before
he was ever big and mattered, though. And he was only ever heel for like a year and a half to 2 years in the very beginning of his career. Like before 2005.
Yeah.
And he debuted in 2002. He was only a heel for like 2 years. So to be a babyface for over two decades, the biggest babyface, you could argue, of all babyfaces.
All right.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Let's wrap this up. Let's wrap this segment up with one last question. We're going to get Cody versus Cena at WrestleMania. Do you guys think Cena is going to win it?
I don't think he's going to win it. I think it's going to be possibly overbooked like it was last year, because last year's main event was pretty overbooked, but in a great way it was overbooked. Because, I mean, that whole finish to Cody Roman 2 was some of the most fun I'd ever had watching wrestling. But I think that Cena's going to get very fucking close, but I don't think Cena's going to win. I think that he might get close, and then we're going to have the fucking Avengers assemble again, but it's going to be a different line of Avengers. I think Roman might wind up coming out to help John, help Cody. Or Punk's going to come out to help Cody. I think that it's going to be a rush to the ring to stop John Cena from doing the big one and stopping The Rock from getting his hands on everything. We still have another month and a half or so of story to go. So let's see who else gets involved in the story. But I definitely think Cena is going to put Cody over. I still think Cena takes it later in the year.
One of the big things that I've seen, though, is just the fact that Paul Heyman cannot control the main event, but he can control his clients, Rock being one of them. That favor is still in play.
And so the question here, Tommy, is, now that we know what the main event at WrestleMania is going to be, do you think John Cena is going to win it?
It honestly depends on if Punk cashes in that favor. If he doesn't, my guess is yes.
Mm-hmm.
I said it a million times, Cody's not losing the title in less than a year. If by the time WrestleMania comes in, that's when he loses it, I'm fine with that, because that would be his year. But if Punk gets to it, Cena's not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, what's up, Blood? What you cooking up?
I just had an idea, guys. So you know how Mania's two nights, and we know that we're definitely going to get Roman, Seth, Punk in a triple threat. Seth doesn't have to waste his favor on a match that he's already in a feud with. What if on night one it's Seth, Punk, Roman? And night two, the favorite gets him into the main event, and it's a triple threat.
Yeah, that's Cody, exactly what
Cena,
I was thinking.
Punk. Cody, Cena, Punk. Triple threat match. No DQ. Anybody can get involved.
That's what I was thinking. Paul Heyman has connections to The Rock.
Yep.
So technically, he could still put in that favor for Punk through The Rock to get him into that main event.
Punk gets his main event. Cena gets his title shot for number 17. Cody still defends and is the conquering hero. Or Punk still gets his main event. Cena gets 17 and they actually do it and they actually have Cody lose. And now Cody's got to fight an uphill battle again, leading to Cody versus Rock.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling that. I don't want to see Punk in a triple threat match versus those two.
But if
is gonna
you
be in the
follow
main event,
Punk's career,
if Punk is going to be in the main event, if Punk is going to be in the main event, I want it to be a one-on-one. That's what I want to see.
Fair, but at the same time, his part would serve two stories. His history with Cena and his history with Cody. His history with The Rock.
All right, let's move on. The other thing that I really want to talk about is we're going to go to the beginning to the Women's Elimination Chamber because we all expected, as we all predicted, Jade Cargill showed up right when the match started before there was any physicality. As soon as the bell rings, here comes the storm. Jade Cargill and both Liv Morgan and Naomi were looking shocked. Bianca Belair, you can kind of see her in the background looking shocked. And then Jade Cargill looks like it was going to go after Liv Morgan and ends up going after Naomi, which is telling us the attacker that took out Jade Cargill a few months ago was Naomi. It was Naomi, like some of us, well, most of us predicted that. But the only thing, my only question here, we saw Bianca, we saw her reaction. She was locked in the cage while this was happening. She couldn't do anything. Bianca couldn't do anything. But is she involved in all this? If Naomi is the one that attacked Jade Cargill, some people even think that Naomi was set up and it was actually Bianca Belair. And Naomi was just kind of just like the sheep in all of this. But I'm really interested to see what's going to happen here with this. Tommy, let's go with you first this time. What do you think is going on here with all this stuff? Jade Cargill returning in the Women's Elimination Chamber.
I don't think Naomi worked alone. I really don't. But what shocked me the most about this chamber is the direction entrance-wise of what happened. You've got the main two, which we had a feeling would be the first two, being Naomi and Liv. That made sense. Jade coming out, we all hoped that would happen, and it did. But Bianca coming out at number three, being in that much distress as she was, you could tell by the look in her eye that she was in pain just watching it. And then as soon as she came out, she was in so much pain if you look at her. But there's no possible way that Naomi pulled this out alone. There's just not. Both Naomi and Bianca benefited from this. I think Nia is right with what she said about a month ago. Bianca is scared. Because it's true that she overall is better than Bianca in almost every way. The looks, the speed, the strength. She's better than Bianca in almost every way, meaning the jealousy there would be there. Naomi comes in. She gets to take her spot and become tag team champions with Bianca again, which has not been done for a long while. So overall, that's her in. Jade's out. Naomi's in. But with Bianca, there's no possible way that Naomi took out Jade that easily. There had to be someone else involved. And Bianca getting Naomi in that quickly, someone who she's trusted for years. There you go. There she is. Right there. Someone to immediately take Jade Cargill's spot.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out for WrestleMania. Maybe we get like a handicap match, Naomi and Bianca versus Jade, maybe a one-on-one or something. But Blood, what do you think is going on here?
So I said this all the way back when it initially happened to Jade, that, I mean, the night that it happened and we went live about it, I said that night, I bet you it was Bianca or Naomi. I said this months ago. Because like I said then, and I'll say it now, and I've said it a couple times since, Naomi, again, was my first pick because she benefited from it. All of a sudden, Jade's out, and then all of a sudden, the tag titles are going to have to be vacated, and all of a sudden, if Bianca didn't find a partner, then she has to forfeit, and then here's Naomi, best friend in arms, the wind beneath my wings. Hey, if you need a partner, I'll sub in. Yeah, and here's the thing that a lot of people keep... Here's the thing that people are automatically forgetting, that people are like, well, Bianca had to do it. Bianca couldn't have done it. Bianca might have been aware of it, but she couldn't have done it. And I'll tell you why. When Jade was attacked, Bianca – well, hold on. When Jade was attacked, Bianca was in the middle of a qualifier for the Queen of the Ring. She was in the ring when they found Jade through that windshield. The only person who was not in the ring or at ringside was Naomi. Here's the other part. Even if Bianca somehow was able to help Naomi beat the shit out of Jade and drop her through a car, then go all the way to the front to Gorilla, have her entrance, be halfway through a match before someone found Jade in a building filled with hundreds of employees and a busy car parking lot, you're forgetting the other detail. If Jade came in and the first person she went after last night was Naomi to beat the brakes off. Look, Naomi's from Orlando. She's 30 minutes from me. This bitch got Disney World beat out of her. All right. Now, why on earth would Jade only focus on Naomi if Bianca did it? Why on earth would Jade only focus on Naomi and not at least turn around to her friend who is inside of a pod, a sitting duck, and not even so much as look at her, glance at her, try to kick the fucking glass in, try to rip the door open to get at her if she thought Bianca did it? She went straight after Naomi automatically. Here's the other thing. If you're going to go straight after Naomi automatically, Bianca's reaction being so distraught, so terrified for her friend, her safety, wishing Jade would stop and begging and pleading, vocally pleading, to the point where Bianca was so distraught, she actually was getting work put in on her by Liv Morgan, of all people. She couldn't fight off Liv. She was so in her head about what just happened to Naomi. That right there tells me that it couldn't have been Bianca, because even if it had been Bianca, Bianca would have gone out there and beat the brakes off for Liv the entire match. She would not have let Liv get as much offense in on her as she did. Because Liv almost beat her like three times. And that wouldn't have happened if Bianca was on her ball.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have happened.
I just realized that I fucking made a big mistake saying that we will probably have a handicap match or something, but I forgot that Bianca actually ended up winning this damn thing. Bianca won the Elimination Chamber, so she's actually going to face Rhea Ripley or Io Sky, but I'm pretty sure we all know it's going to be Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania, which leaves Naomi versus Jade Cargill, I'm assuming, for WrestleMania.
Which tells me that we're probably getting Jade versus Bianca at SummerSlam. So, because they wanted to do that match, and if you can't do it on the biggest stage possible at Mania, save it for one of the other big four. But I thought this was incredibly well executed. I thought Jade looked great. I mean, every hit she gave to Naomi looked brutal. That bicycle pump kick, it head first into the cage door, under one of the cage doors. I mean, she was trying to decapitate homegirl. Yeah. And I thought Bianca sold it perfectly. So I guess we're going to have to wait and see Friday, because I bet you we're getting the reveal, the real reveal on Friday.
Yeah. What a
To Liv selling that one hit from the top of the pod with Naomi. Not with Naomi, Bianca. The whip. The whip heard around the stadium.
Mm-hmm. I immediately turned to my wife and said, you know, people can say what they want about Liv, but you have got to have ridiculous amount of focus and strength to hold up your dangling body weight with that amount of pain rippling through you at one time. Because it cut her all the way around. It cut her.
Yeah,
that, and she still held her entire body weight. Yeah. She, hanging, dangling midair with a ginormous welt and cut and blood coming from around her ribs. She didn't let go. The body's natural instinct is to tuck in when that kind of pain happens.
Here we go.
So drops the lid. No, Liv took it like a champ.
Whoa.
The slaves hold on.
Pause. Pause. No, I'm kidding.
Liv took
it. Actually, no. This ain't no red light. This ain't red light, green light. Go. No pause. No pause.
So, yeah, that was.
I said what I said.
That was a crazy way to start off the Elimination Chamber. The whole pay-per-view, the whole PLE was great. And the women did an awesome job, I thought, with their match. I didn't expect Bianca Belair to win it. I know that for a fact.
I didn't either.
But I
gotta be honest. I was dejected. I was like, it's either gonna be Bailey or Roxanne, and then Roxanne's out. I was like, no, okay, then Bailey, and then Bailey's out. I'm like, Alexa, I was like, who the fuck? You know, because I'm so dead set in my brain at the time that I'm thinking Jade and Bianca are doing Mania. That's what I'm thinking this whole time. Jade and Bianca must have a program this year. So Bianca is the last person I'm expecting to win. So I'm like, the fuck? I'm like, not Roxanne, not Bailey, not Alexa. No, who? Not Liv, not for the 13th time, not Liv. And then I'm like, Bianca? I'm like, well, that's a choice. You know, it's going to be a great match.
I wasn't even mad at that.
If you listen back to our predictions, I was one of them who named her. I said I was down to three. It was either Naomi, Alexa, or Bailey. Not Bailey, or Bianca. Why do I keep mixing up these names today? But I did name Bianca as one of the three I thought could possibly win this.
But if you're doing a prediction, you got to really only pick one to put your cart on, that horse, you know?
Yeah.
And so none of us penultimately were like, oh, it's Bianca. Without a doubt, it's Bianca. You know, like, I thought Bailey. I was super surprised how early she got out. So I thought the match was incredibly well worked. One of the best women's elimination chambers. Because I think we all went to the show thinking, oh, it's going to be good. It turned out to be fucking great.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the best kind of PLE. It didn't just meet your expectations. It fucking exceeded them. And I thought the girls killed it for an opener. Killed it.
All right, you guys. So from one return to another, let's go on over to the unsanctioned match between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Now, this match, it started off in the dark. The referee was wearing an all-black shirt, not an official referee shirt.
Seeing a ref not wear official ref clothing. It was like street clothing with him.
It was.
Well, Tommy, let's not set it up.
It was not an official match, so it makes sense for the referee to be out there without an official referee shirt. Now, the other thing that I noticed was the black gloves. And whenever you see a referee wearing black gloves, that usually means one thing. Blood.
Color.
We didn't get it. Later on, we found out why. We already talked about it. Cody Rhodes, he was the only one that got color in this PLE. So they saved that for the main segment at the very end. So it makes sense as to why Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn did not do the color spot. But then my other question was, okay, if this is an unsanctioned match, why even have any type of referee or anything out there? And shortly after I asked myself that question, Michael Cole answered this question very, very perfectly. He said, well, the referee can't do anything. He can't stop it. These guys are going to do everything to each other. He's only there to count, to decide if like someone gets knocked out, or I forgot what the third reason was. But
if one of them submits, it's still done.
Or submission. There you go. So the match starts, and it was everything that we expected and more, except for the blood part. They did some fucking crazy stuff to each other. For my personal taste, for my personal liking, a little too many false finishes. I thought, like, if these guys are kicking out of everything that they're giving to each other right now, how is this match going to end? Like, what is it going to take for this match to end? And right when I thought, okay, this is it, boom, another kick out, and then another kick out, and then... But that's just me being picky. But other than that, the match itself was fucking brutal. And Kevin Owens won, which is the other thing that we wanted to see from come out from all of this. So let's give us your thoughts about the match first, Mr. Blood, and then we'll talk about the big return.
Okay, so I thought the match was fantastic. I mean, I kept saying these guys could fight forever. And I'll watch these guys have one-on-one every week. I just love watching them work together. The match was brutal. One thing that stood out to me was that there was not a single package pile driver in this entire match. Not even afterwards. In fact, the biggest holy shit spots that happened were the apron power bombs. And I thought, okay, well, he's probably going to package pile drive him afterwards. He never went for it once. And I'm wondering if that's because maybe Kevin thought, I don't need it, or maybe some of the things that Sammy had said to him leading up to their program on Friday the previous evening maybe got to him. Maybe he didn't want to end or break Sammy's neck. Like, maybe he thought, if I can just get him to stay down and I can beat him, I don't have to. And then when Sammy wouldn't stay down, he lost his shit and he just started apron powerbombing him over and over and over again. And we haven't seen that apron powerbomb in a long time. Only heel Kevin uses it. So I thought what was great was they did a lot of cool weapon spots. Barbed wire fucking chair was insane. I understand why we didn't get blood. We didn't get color. It's because, and Triple H has said this, if you use it all the time, it's not as special. And you really want to save it for the perfect special, perfect special moments. And we still got blood in this match. It was just not gushing. They were bleeding on their backs, their elbows, cuts all across their arms. Kevin was bleeding on the side of his nose for a little bit. Like, they were bleeding from actual, like, bumps and shit they were taking. Not pre-planned spot blood, which is still real blood, but it's blading. And I thought that even though it didn't have, you know, a gusher all over the fucking place, I thought the fact that they were beating each other up so bad that you could physically see the welts, physically see the bruises, physically see the cuts and the punctures in their skin, the scrapes. It felt like these guys were really just in a fucking fight. And that's what I wanted to see. Would it have been cool to have two blood spots for the evening? Of course it would have been. But then again, Kevin just bled a gusher at Rumble. So I understand not wanting to overuse it with them. Their match, at the end of it, I sat there feeling like, would the blood have been cool? Yes. Was it needed? No. And I did love this. I think this might have been my favorite one-on-one these guys have ever done. It was excruciating. It was longer than their other matches they've had together. They tried to fucking kill each other. The double stack table spot, awesome, because we never get that anymore. I thought Kevin was going through it. So to see Sammy take that massive of a fucking bump when Kevin's right there to take it, because that's what Kevin loves to do, I thought was just really fucking cool. And the right guy won because he needs that momentum going into Mania against Randy. So I thought fucking stellar. Stellar, stellar, stellar.
Tommy?
Blood, I think I know exactly what got into his head. The fact that Sammy said, he didn't say it word for word, but he did paraphrase it. After Kevin said that after this, he would not help Sammy's family and all of that, and Sammy responded saying, but he would help Kevin's? I think that got into Kevin's head a little bit. Because that specific thing made him think, okay, maybe I don't want to snap his neck. Because he would help my family even though I won't help his.
The thing is, no matter how far these guys go against each other, they've been like brothers for 20 years. It's hard. You can't just shut off loving somebody like that. No matter how angry you are at them, no matter how violent it gets, they are someone that you spent hundreds of hours and hundreds of moments of your life with. You can't help but feel something, no matter how, even as brutal as they got, they're still like brothers. They're just not getting along right now, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that they played that perfectly.
Yeah, I don't know, man. If my brother dropped toehold me in a barbed wire steel chair and I almost lost an eyeball, I'd probably never talk to him.
Like, I
but you still love him. So. You'd still love him. Man, you wouldn't be able to help.
Guy.
Hey, it's instinctive.
He hit me with a hockey stick? Oh, hell no.
But I still will say, though, that it was good to see barbed wire in the ring again.
Oh, yeah.
You guys are fucking savages. That's why.
Long while. Since the last time we've seen barbed wire anything.
You guys are
I thought that was really cool. Goddamn right.
Yeah. No, they they told such a great story, man. It was a great story. You know, the history, these guys go way back. The matches that they've had. The fact that they want to top each other. I mean, pause. They want to top each match. They want to top each match that they have. And I think they
it's
did.
It's lonely on the road.
And then we talked about the pile driver that Kevin Owens has taken out plenty of top talents in the WWE. Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes, Sami Zayn. When he was about to do it at the end after the match, Kevin Owens was already on his way out. The match was done. Kevin Owens won. He was leaving. And then he comes back to get some more. He was going to finish the job. He was going to hit the pile driver, I'm assuming. That's what he was going for, Kevin Owens, on Sami Zayn.
Like the pile driver on the concrete. Like, he pulled out that cushioning just so he could do it on the concrete to say, you're not coming back from this.
And bro almost fucking cut the feed too. This man was peeling back the thing while the wires to the program were taped to it. I was like, no, stop, you're gonna knock out the feed. But you know what I do want to say to end my thoughts on this match before we go into the return? I loved the choice to make it intimate, dropping the lights only on the ring. I thought, what a great way to close everybody else off. It's unsanctioned, sure, but it's saying this is so personal without saying it's so personal. It's literally going, these two are in their own world where it's just me and you, and one of us has to win. And I thought that that was such a great production choice. Yeah, it really sold the match.
Only one of us are coming out of this, either way.
Very romantic, indeed, for sure. Yeah, low so number. Right when I thought for sure, I said, this is it. Sami Zayn is not coming back ever again. And he was about to do the package pile driver. At least to me, that's what it looked like. But then Randy Orton's music hit. And again, like we all expected, like we all predicted, Randy Orton is back. And he came back ready to fight. He came after Kevin Owens, after Randy Orton has been gone for feels like fucking forever. And
months or so that he's been out, at least.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I think it was like November.
Yeah, but he came back to get his revenge after Kevin Owens took out Randy Orton with the package pile driver of his own. And man, it's so good to see Randy Orton back again. And it looks like we're about to have Randy Orton versus Kevin Owens at WrestleMania, right?
Oh, I almost see that movie before all of them decided to go, okay, this is when we're going to do our jobs now.
I was so mad too, bro. I filmed my live reaction to his return. And I'm sitting there like, and I knew it. I knew the moment he picked that chair up and he was taking the time. I was like, he's going to go for a punt. One illegal move for another illegal move. I literally said it live and I was like, he's going to do the punt. He's going to do the punt. One band move versus another band move. That's the story going into Mania. It'll be the punt versus the package pile driver. And I thought to myself, oh, come on, hurry up, line up in that corner. And when he went for the punt and they stopped him, I thought,
which, by the way,
I understand you're going to save it, but fuck y'all.
Which, by because the way, as soon I thought as, that was so stupid. Because the security guards were not doing jack shit when Kevin Owens was beating the crap out of Sami Zayn after the match.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, we're going to let him attempt murder this guy, but letting him get kicked in the head, that's too far. Mm-hmm. Like one kick versus trying to snap a dude's fucking spine on a ring apron.
To let his head up against the concrete, but
They literally sat there and let him rip the padding back. They didn't even stop him from ripping the padding back. I'm like, dude, it's you. There's like nine of you versus one of him. Just step on the pads. Like, and then what I thought was really dumb, my least favorite spot in all of professional wrestling. We're all going to break up this fight, but we're going to stop you. But we're all just going to attack you one at a time. So, like, there's, like, fucking five of them, and Randy's there, and they're like, well, I guess it's my turn to eat an RKO. That didn't work for him. It'll work for me. RKO. Well, it didn't work for those two guys. It'll work for me. And then I'm just like, there's five of you. Just jump him.
And then
you jump him. Go for the legs. Like, I'm just sitting here thinking, how stupid are you? And then I sat there in my life like, y'all deserve this shit. RKO, Randy. Give him an RKO. Hand out RKOs like you're fucking Oprah. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. Whoever goes, let's all stop this guy in a group. There's more of us than there are of him. But we have to take turns. Like, who the fuck does that? What the fuck? You deserve that shit.
So, is that one moment where Randy puts his hand out, the other security guard for some bizarre fucking trusts him and puts.
I've never seen Randy Orton before.
Fucking RKO. I'm like, why in the world? This man has pulled this trick many times before. Why the fuck?
He must not watch the. He must not watch the product. He's like, oh well, he just took out like three of my buddies, and he just RKO'd a competitor in the ring.
Damn,
and of course he needs it with me.
And I thought I was a picky one, man.
I thought that, like, that. When it comes down to logic, it's like, come on, you just took out three of my fucking friends, but you're gonna shake my hand.
All right, so. Final thoughts.
Loved it.
Final thoughts on Randy Orton's return. Anything else you guys want to add before we go on to the men's Elimination Chamber match?
I think save that fucking punt kick for Mania for the biggest pop. Let him get so close every time and let Kevin roll out of the ring. Someone stop him. Someone interferes and gets in the way. Do not let him hit that punt until Mania. Yeah. Let it really sit with fans. Let them want it so badly that when it actually happens in their match at Mania, the pop is going to be insane.
Yeah, just let it build up for the next month. You put that match at Mania. Kevin tries to do that package pile driver. Randy gets out and goes, fuck you. That's not happening. Punt.
It's a very protected move. It's a super protected move. No one's ever kicked out of the fucking punt. Nobody. Protect it. Save it for the biggest fucking moment. Let that be the move he pins with. Don't let him pin with an RKO at Mania. The punt needs to be the final move that puts Kevin away.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the men's Elimination Chamber. Another great match.
For last, huh?
Yeah, you're forgetting the tag match, unless you want to skim over it.
Oh, fuck. Women's tag match. Trish Stratus and Tiffany Stratton won. You know what? I do have something to say about this. Trish Stratus, because honestly, I didn't watch this live, right? As we talked about, I pretty much skipped through most of this match because what the fuck?
But yeah,
What I did watch, Trish Stratus still got it. She looked.
I told you. I said that on Friday.
God damn it, Mr. Blood. I'm trying to be nice here, and you're gonna rub it in my face.
Screw that. You were a doubter. Screw that. I let you get away with it. I told you she still got it.
I was surprised. Okay, she still got it in the ring. I don't know about on the mic or anything else, but yeah, Tiffany Stratton. Good for her, man. She gets to win next to her hero, one of her heroes, Trish Stratus, in Canada as a champion. Great moment for her, for Tiffany Stratton. Good momentum, but I don't care. What do you guys think?
I mean, the match served what it needed to serve. It was there to fill a little extra time, to fill out the PLE for a little bit more of a card. I thought match was fine. Wasn't anything special by any means. Just a way to get Tiffany some more momentum, get Trish a hometown pop, get some Canadian eyes on the product. Nia was there. Candace was there. Other than that, the only thing about the match I found amusing was in the final closing moments when Tiffany tags back in and, like, fucking Candace gets alley-ooped over the ropes. She almost fucking knees Trish Stratus laying on the apron right in the fucking skull. And then Trish is still in the way when Tiffany is trying to do a move. She hasn't, like, full. She's still selling, but she's not looking at Tiffany while she's selling. She almost got a knee dropped in her face, by the way. So she's facing out towards the ramp. And you just see Tiffany several times just, like, try to set a move up, but she doesn't want Tiffany to get, or Trish to get hit by Nia coming in or whoever it was. So she keeps kicking, like, gently kicking fucking Trish, like, move.
Oh, yeah, in the corner.
Move.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just like, hold on. And she almost kicked her in the head. And she's like, come on. And I'm like, hey, whoa, she can't see you. She's got her back turned to you. She almost got her fucking knee in her face. And I'm like, this is your hero. Can you stop kicking your hero, like, to get out of your way? Because it's a little disrespectful. Like, you know, just look down and see and go, hey, move. I'm trying to set up. Like, why you got to kick her? She kicked her, like, three fucking times.
Yeah. So my thoughts on this, is simple. As we've said, this is the most predictable match of the night. It just was.
Between
we all knew that Tiffany and Trish was going to win this simply because of the fact that there's no way you are going to let your champion lose a month and a half before Mania. Mm. Like that's not going to happen.
Vince might have done it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So overall, this match served its purpose, which is to just let Trish actually wrestle in front of her kids, because her kids have never seen her wrestle in person. But that was the only reason why she was there, is because she's the hometown hero.
Well, yeah, since we're talking about it, I didn't think we would even go this far into talking about this match. But the other thing too that I noticed, I'm like, are they trying to like purposely injure Tiffany Stratton? I know that's a stupid question. I know they're not really.
No, but I thought the same thing. There were a couple of spots where I thought you're gonna fucking injure this chick.
Which spot is it? Do you think that I'm referring to?
When she does the swan dive out of the ring, they barely fucking caught her for the second time.
Oh, I didn't even see that. I fast forwarded that part. The one that I was talking about.
Yeah, she freaking, they caught her lower half. She'll smack her head to the mat again.
No, the one that I saw was she was going for the moonsault. What does she call it? The prettiest moonsault?
Yeah, the prettiest moonsault ever.
Candice LeRae catches her when she hits the top turnbuckle and shoves her, but it made her.
The legs, yeah.
That's how Charlotte Flair fucked up her knee versus Asuka, and that took Charlotte Flair out. She fucked up her ACL with something similar like that, and I'm like,
yeah, I remember that spot because I literally looked at my wife at the time on the couch when I saw that. I said, "So, dude, can y'all stop trying to injure her before fucking Mania?" I literally said that audibly, and this is another reason I don't like Candace. I'm like, dude, you're being too rough. Okay, because every time it seems that Tiffany almost gets injured in the last few weeks since becoming champion leading to Mania, Candace is involved in it somehow. And literally, like, shoving her legs out of her. How about this? The real spot should be you touch her legs and make it look like you're applying force so she can sell her own fall. Don't actually fucking push the girl's legs up under her when she's standing 10 feet in the fucking air. And she's gonna fall backwards, okay? Because the way that her leg, she was supposed to look like falling to the tree of woe, which is when you're pinned upside down, and it looked like she only got one leg that caught all of her body weight falling at once.
Yeah,
great way to rip your fucking meniscus.
Yeah,
great way to tear your fucking meniscus.
I'm gonna be so upset if she stands up and she's limping.
I was gonna be mad too, bro. Dude. Yeah. If anything, at this point, keep her. I don't want to. At this point, I'm so nervous for Tiffany because of all the close calls the last 3 weeks.
Bro,
I'm legit just in favor of keeping her out of matches till Mania.
No.
Keep her in segments. Keep her in pull aparts. Keep her out of fucking matches.
Keep her away from Nia Jax and Candice LeRae.
Like with Candice.
Yeah. Well, fuck, at this point, Candice is actually is less safe than Nia.
Go ahead, Tommy.
Is it just. Or does Candace make you think a little bit, not nearly as rough, obviously, but still on that higher side of early Ronda?
Candace makes me think of dry paint.
Yeah, fucking boring as shit.
All right, let's move on. I don't want to talk about this anymore. This is getting me mad.
Early Ronda.
Sorry, I generally look at her and I just don't know what Johnny Gargano sees. I really don't.
Don't either.
All right, can we talk about the men's chamber now?
Let's talk about what we were really here for.
All right, but let me just set it up, Tommy. Don't interrupt me this time. All right, we got the men's chamber. All right, full of great moments, full of surprises, full of exciting spots. An unexpected moment here because we have Drew and Seth to start off the thing. And then we had Damian Priest was third. Logan Paul was fourth. and they saved Cena and Punk for the last two entrants. What I didn't expect was that Drew McIntyre was going to be the first one to get eliminated by Damian Priest. And after that, I was just like, I was shocked of what I was seeing. But like I said, a lot of great moments. We saw Cena and Punk again in the ring for the first time in a match in I don't know how long. So that was,
that was really cool.
Yeah, so that was really cool to see. The last two, actually, let's go with the last three, was Seth Rollins, CM Punk, and John Cena. Seth Rollins was the first one to get eliminated. And three I thought that was the last of Seth Rollins, right? But no, Seth Rollins screwed CM Punk when Cena and Punk were the last two left. Seth Rollins caused CM Punk the Elimination Chamber to allow John Cena to win. But the way that John Cena won wasn't very John Cena-ish. But then later on, we find out it made sense. The finish of this match makes sense. The way that John Cena won makes sense because later on we saw that John Cena turn heel. But John Cena took advantage of Seth Rollins attacking CM Punk, which is not something we're used to seeing. But Tommy, let's go with you first, and then we'll go Mr. Blood.
I'm going to start off with the entrances real quick. I commented on a post on Facebook of a picture of Logan Paul as he was entering in with the American flag in his hand. I commented saying, it reminds me of Hogan. Prove me wrong. Somebody replied saying, you spelled Bogan wrong.
I don't get it.
So, like, and it's true. I look at how he entered going into the ring, and it reminded me so much of how Hulk Hogan used to come into the ring. Him coming out, waving the American flag, all of that. Like, that was Hogan's big thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what I loved about this match is after Seth was eliminated. The fact
let
that...
Let me give a couple quick shout-outs there, Tommy. Shout-out to Taya. Says, I was floor at Chamber last night. It was my first PLE. Definitely unforgettable. What a first PLE for someone to go to. This Elimination Chamber was fucking crazy.
Oh, is that Owens?
It says Taya. Taya Bailey's version is this person's name. Tripp says it doesn't make sense, even though for John Cena to turn heel. We went over that already. You can go back and listen to it. I'm going to put this out on Apple Podcasts. Shout out to Toxic, who another co-host can't be here with us right now. But go ahead, Tommy.
One of the big things that I loved was the respect between Cena and Punk in the middle. Right after Seth was eliminated, Cena puts out his hand for a handshake. Punk goes, no, screw that, and just hugs him. The respect between those two during this match.
Yeah, I love throw it. That shit out the window now with John Cena being the...
Of how much history these two have. And I honestly was with you, Snug. I thought that Logan Paul was going to be the first eliminated. I was not expecting whatsoever for it to be McIntyre.
Nah, Logan Paul's a goat. That's why. Shout out to Nightmare317 says, WWE totally ignored Drake in the audience. Fuck Drake. Anyway.
Yeah, fuck Drake.
What was he there for? To recruit minors? No.
Yeah, he's probably scouting the Make-A-Wish kids.
Somebody said, posted the Drake meme that's like, oh, Drake sees Alexa Bliss and then realizes she's 33 years old and he looks away.
But
I felt the same way about Liv Morgan. No. Who's in there beating that child? I'll take her home.
Yeah.
So there was another view that I saw of the YouTuber BDE. He was at the corner on the floor of Punk's little spot.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't realize, Punk had a little bit of issues in his pod.
Yeah, the lights.
The top light kept falling.
Yeah, the first slam on the outside, the moment that Rollins got alley-ooped out, he's cross-legged on the floor. And you just see him do this out of the corner of the screen going like this while he's still sitting down. And then throughout the next 5 minutes, his man is up there trying to fix this light. And when fucking, I think it was Rollins got slammed face first into his pod, the light just drops. And Punk doesn't flinch. This man's the 10 toes down. He's eye fucking the shit out of these two with a hate boner. And you just see this light go right in front of his face. He doesn't blink. He doesn't move at it. He doesn't miss. He just stands there, stares. And then when they get out of the way and they get back in the ring, when he shoots him off, then he just spends the next like 30 seconds trying to fix the light, replace the light. And
another thing, the end of the match, it truly showed how much Seth despises with a passion Punk.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a spot with the camera where you could hear what Seth was saying during that submission. Die, motherfucker! Die! Like, he wanted Punk to die from that. That is how much Seth hates Punk with a damn passion.
Well, there goes my TikTok live. All right.
Because you said die.
Yeah.
So, did it kick you off or just the 18 and up?
Nah, but it'll probably go back to 18 and up now. But it's good. Go ahead, Tommy. Finish your thoughts and then we let blood go.
But the fact that Seth also screwed over Punk, that made sense. It truly did. It made sense to me. And I absolutely love the way it happened.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to get out and get away from Cena when all of a sudden the stomp to the metal happens. I'm like, well, there's our winner there. He's not coming out from that. The fact that he was still conscious after that and not knocked out cold and still had a little bit in him shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
But Punk had to fight through this match. Like, he really, really wanted that main event spot. Which, as he should, he has yet to main event WrestleMania at all. But still, I absolutely love the way this match went through. I really did.
I thought this match was awesome. Awesome. I'll start where you did. I don't think Drew getting eliminated first was a shock at all. Because if we go back to their in-ring segment just last week, in fact, I think it was Friday, where they're all just going at each other, one after the other, coming after the ring. Damian Priest literally looked right at Drew and said, I'm going to eliminate your ass from the chamber, and then you won't have anybody again to blame but yourself. And he straight up told him, I'm going to eliminate you, and I'm going to make you cry about it. And he, insult to injury, gets his ass rolled up in that crucifix, 1, 2, 3, and he did it. Now, because that automatically knows, we already knew for some time now it's going to be Drew versus Damian at Mania. We already knew that. That was already something that had been reported a while ago. I loved that they were trying to put, it looked like they were trying to put Logan over by having him get taken. The only way to get rid of him was to all the OGs to kind of finisher spam them one after the other to really get rid of him. Letting him eliminate Damian was an interesting choice. But I think it fit because he didn't just eliminate Damian on his own accord. If I remember correctly, Damian got screwed over by Drew, who had just got eliminated, who lost his shit, and then Logan capitalized with a frog splash. Yeah. So I thought that was great. So then we have our first three eliminations gone. So we've got Drew, we've got Damian, and we've got Logan. Then it comes down to the final three. What a final three. Let's not forget the history between these guys. John Cena, who used to fight against the Authority when Rollins was a corporate heel champion, who famously broke John Cena's nose with that ripcord knee. And then we also have the fact that we've got the massive history between Punk and Seth. And the story going in there, which was also hammered home on Friday again, Punk's got two people very disturbingly obsessed with him. Drew, and fucking Rollins. Rollins, who could have gotten rid of fucking Cena had he not been so focused on Punk. He put Cena through a pod. He could have finished Cena off. But instead, he decided to leave him there, safe outside the ring where pins don't count, and go back in to focus on Punk. He was so fixated, he screwed himself. Okay? So that feeds into that story of probably Punk and Seth and Roman at Mania. This seething, unyielding obsession that Seth has, where it is self-destructive for him at this point. And I thought getting rid of Rollins to further that rage, this awesome respect and back and forth and all the cool callbacks between Cena and Punk from Money in the Bank years ago in 2011, and then even callbacks to their final match against each other on the Monday Night Raw way back in 2013, which is the very last time they ever had a one-on-one, I thought was awesome. They played everything perfectly. I mean, and the stomp to really steal that obsession, that hatred that Seth has for Punk, perfectly angled in the camera. What a great shot. Because no one saw that coming. You make us forget about Seth. You're fighting off Cena. You turn around and you're just gasping for air. And then out of nowhere, out of frame, a very beautiful and very snug, no pun intended, fucking stomp headfirst into the mat for Cena to do a very un-Cena-y thing. Because normally we've seen this happen where Cena's had people interfere in his matches before. If we go back to Money in the Bank against Punk all those years ago, when they tried to interfere in that match and screw over Punk so Cena could win, Cena didn't take the cover. Cena got out of the ring and stopped John Laurinaitis and Vince and said, I'm not going to win this way. He didn't do that tonight with Punk. He looked, realized, I want that 17th title win more than anything. And he drug Punk's carcass back in. And I love that they still protected Punk in the finish. Punk only lost because Seth stomped him, dazed him. And then they didn't make Punk tap either. They let him do the tough, badass pass-out spot from pain. So they also protected him the fact that he didn't quit either. And then Cena goes over in what I thought was possibly the maybe one of the best men's chamber matches we've had in the last decade because of the amount of story that went into it, the swerves in the middle, and then how the finish ultimately led to that awesome heel turn payoff to close out the PLE. I thought it was chef's fucking kiss. It was fucking awesome. It took a pay-per-view that would have been good to absolutely great.
The only thing that we didn't predict out of everything that we saw on the show, out of everything that we predicted, out of everything that we knew was going to happen, no Roman Reigns. I thought for sure Roman Reigns was going to show up tonight to screw Seth Rollins. But I got to say, that's probably the only thing that we got wrong out of all of this, right?
Yeah, I think that it makes sense, though. The best, I think it fits the story. Because now Seth can't blame anybody but himself. The same thing as Damian. The only reason Seth lost was because of Seth.
Yeah.
He can't blame Roman for this. And Roman's going to throw that in his face the next time they have a promo exchange. You're obsessed with Punk. You screwed yourself. You said that I couldn't beat Cody because I was obsessed with you. Well, now you can't beat anybody else because you're obsessed with Punk.
Yeah.
Like, you literally took out your own main event spot because you were obsessed with Punk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, shit, you guys, what a fucking PLE that was, man. Jesus. All right, so we got Cena turning heel. Cody didn't join The Rock. Cena and The Rock have joined forces. Cena won the chamber. Jade is back. There's so much happening here. We're on the road for WrestleMania. Now, for sure, it feels like this PLE felt like a big blow-off PLE. The end to a lot of these questions. And also the beginning. Now, officially, at least to me, it feels like WrestleMania, the road to WrestleMania is finally beginning here. So I'm super excited to see what happens tomorrow on Monday night.
On the
we have a great month build.
That is exactly what Triple H said at the press conference. First thing he said, besides Joe Tessitore saying that he was going to have to answer for the stuff that he said did with Cena, and he's like, I had nothing to do with that. But one of the first things he asked was, does this truly feel like the road to WrestleMania now? And everybody, all of the press, agreed, like, yeah, this absolutely feels like the road.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I'm glad we're there. I'm glad we're here finally.
The next month and a half, so long as they keep these stories all strong, the next month and a half, so long as these stories have some great build in them, it looks like nearly every match going into Mania is going to have a great story behind it, or stories that make sense because there's been time and attention put into them. So this might be a really, really good WrestleMania.
It better be shit, because I paid a lot of fucking money to watch it. So with that being said, you guys,
I paid $7.99.
Motherfucker, I paid $3,000.
You went live? Oh, you're going live this year?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, how the hell are we going to do? So I guess we're doing an after-the-show podcast in a hotel.
I'm going to take my equipment. I'll do it from the hotel.
All right.
All right, you guys, with that being said.
Each night.
Both night one and night.
Huh?
Are we doing both night one and night two, or are we just going to combine them into one?
I'm pretty sure
we'll have to do it per night.
Yeah, we're going to have to do per night if I'm not.
It's going
to
be a six-hour podcast. It'll be a six-hour podcast if we don't.
Yeah, I'll try to stay sober, but I am going to be in Vegas, so no promises there.
Let's try to stay sober.
All right, you guys, with that being said, that was the Elimination Chamber review with the Snug Wrestling Podcast. Thank you, Mr. Blood. Thank you, Tommy. Toxic and BT Knight were not here with us, but they'll be back soon. Thanks, everyone that was listening and watching on the comments. Leave a star rating and leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and we'll see you guys soon. Later.
Yep. Later.